Wisconsin Congressman Mark Pocan and Glenn Grothman will be joining us this hour to talk about tax reform and other issues before Congress and to answer your questions and to hear your views on the issues of the day. Congressman Grothman will join us first. I'm Joy Cardine. You're listening to the Ideas Network. But before that, Kate Archer-Kent joins me as we are in our fall membership drive asking for your pledges of support.
At WPR.org or 888-202-2552. Last hour, we almost eked out our goal. We just fell maybe a couple pledges short. But this hour, this hour's goal is 40 pledges. So we've upped it considerably. We know people are listening. Help us meet this goal when you give your gift right now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
And this is a big year for WPR. It's
sure
our
is.
Centennial. So give the next 100 years a strong start with your support. Your support ensures a bright future for Wisconsin Public Radio programs that you rely on every day.
You enjoy listening to Wisconsin Public Radio in part because we're commercial free. That means we depend on other sources of funding. State, federal, corporate funding are important. And then there's another source that's extremely important.
And that is you. The single largest piece of the budget pie comes from listeners. Your support makes all the difference. It's the backbone of our funding. Make your pledge now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Now let's admit it. Sometimes we spend money on silly things.
I have definitely bought some crazy clothes.
It's a little thing, you wind it up and it goes across the top of the table. She broke it in the first 5 seconds.
Silliest thing. It was Kahlua.
It's pretty easy to make a questionable decision about how we spend our money, and it can be just as easy, and not a bad idea, to make a few sound investments along the way. Like supporting Wisconsin Public Radio. Listener support is the single largest source of funding at WPR, so make a sound investment with your gift to WPR right now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Make that pledge now as we are asking for your support during this fall membership drive, and this will be a very abbreviated ask as we are making sure that we have equal time for both of our Congress members during this, which is one of our ongoing series where we ask your elected representatives and your representatives and senators in Congress to join us to answer your questions and to respond to your views. Make your pledge to keep these forums on the air at WPR.org or 888-202-2552. Thanks, Kate. We're going to talk to you in a little bit. Let's welcome our first to Congress. Glenn Grothman is a Republican U.S. Representative from Wisconsin's 6th Congressional District. That includes Oshkosh, Fond du Lac, Sheboygan, Portage, and Manitowoc. Good morning, and thank you very much for being with us.
Glad to be on the show, as always, Joy.
And
am I ever going to be able to be interviewed by you again after Sunday?
I don't know. I maybe down the road I'll have some position where I will be interviewing people, but probably not on Wisconsin Public Radio. You will probably be interviewed by Kate Archer-Kent or one of our other hosts. And I do want to thank you for coming on, Congressman Grothman. Almost every time we ask you to join to talk with listeners, you have always been accessible, and I appreciate that.
Well, we try to be accessible.
Yeah. So I wanted to talk to you first about Vice President Mike Pence is going to be in Wisconsin today. He's going to join Governor Walker in Waukesha for a tour of a manufacturing business and a discussion with local leaders and families about tax reform. Pence is also going to be hosting a fundraiser in Milwaukee after that. What are your thoughts? Is Wisconsin doing the right thing with regards to manufacturing? And what is Wisconsin doing that would attract Vice President Pence?
Well, yeah, I don't know if your listeners are aware. Wisconsin, as a percent of employment, the second highest percentage of employees are involved in manufacturing in Wisconsin and the country. We're just a hair behind Indiana. And we're doing a great job. I mean, as I get around the state, again and again, the biggest complaint of manufacturers is they can't find people to work. So our manufacturing industry is booming in the state of Wisconsin. I think we have a great tax climate. I think we have an improving regulatory climate. I would just wish we could get more young people to go into manufacturing and fill those jobs. But I think that's probably one of the reasons why Vice President Pence is going to be coming through Wisconsin tonight.
Yeah, Pence's visit comes a day after President Trump and congressional Republicans rolled out a $5 trillion plan to revamp the tax code. It would cut the corporate tax rate from 35% to 20%. It would reduce the number of tax brackets from 7 to 3. It would double the standard deduction. It would kill the estate tax, and there's more. Generally speaking, is this the direction we need to go with regard to tax reform?
Well, I think in general it is. I will tell you this. I think it's kind of funny, all the excitement around the plan, because obviously I used to do taxes. And when you look at a tax plan, a lot of times you have to look at the details. And the details haven't been put out there. We received a private briefing yesterday for 3 or 4 hours. I asked a lot of questions, and the thing that surprised me the most is the people who are pushing the plan didn't know the answers to those questions. The plan right now is what they call revenue neutral, or that is the goal. Taxes are going to go down for some people, are going to go up for others. And presumably the tax code will be simplified, which is a good thing. I think overall the intent is good. We certainly can no longer be in a situation in which we are uncompetitive worldwide with our corporate tax rate. So it's something that has to be addressed. We have to get rid of something called the repatriation tax, where right now we penalize countries who make money abroad and try to bring it back in the country. On the other hand, I always do like to look out for the average guy, look out for the middle class. And while I like the broad structure, I think what your listeners have to realize is there are a lot of questions that have yet to be answered. And even when you talk to the people who've been in that room putting together this plan, many unknowns. I do not know what sort of deductions and credits they're all getting rid of. We do not know yet where the personal income tax rates begin and end. So a lot of questions are really up in the air.
Sharon on Facebook says, from what I've heard, the proposed tax reform is a continuation of the idea of trickle-down economics. What evidence is there that these ideas have worked for our shrinking middle class?
Well, like I said, we don't even really know what the tax plan is yet. And I don't believe it is a belief in trickle-down economics. There's an element here, though, of supply-side economics. And that means that you have to have a tax code that encourages people to do things that cause them to pay taxes in this country. And obviously, if businesses make decisions and say, I'd rather set up shop in Ireland or set up shop in an Asian country than set up shop here, it's bad for the country. But like I said, I have said that this plan has got to look out for the middle class. And I think it's something that has been underpublicized. There was an original Republican plan out there about 6 months ago that I didn't like at all because I did think it was tilted too much towards too much away from the working man and woman. And Donald Trump, I think, fought Congress there, wouldn't stand for it. And I hope by the time this is done, that Donald Trump and me, quite frankly, went out, and we do make sure that this primarily benefits the middle class.
Yeah, there, as you mentioned, a lot of details are still up in the air, but another, at least a bullet point, is that there would be a substantially higher child tax credit, which is currently $1,000 per child younger than 17. Any thoughts on that?
I think it's good if we have a credit that benefits everybody with children. I'll say that. And in the past, sometimes, you know, to get credit, you have to, you know, do things, maybe pay on daycare, though there's something in there for daycare as well. But I think it's good that we continue helping people with children. I think the old personal exemption may be disappearing, which is, you know, I don't know, that's a good or probably a bad thing. But like I said, we're going to have to wait until they fill in all those numbers.
Yeah, so Democrats aren't thrilled with the plan. We'll hear from Congressman Mark Buchanan in our next segment. But Senate Minority Leader Chuck Schumer said under this plan, the wealthiest Americans and wealthiest corporations make out like bandits, while middle-class Americans are left holding the bag.
I don't know why he would say that. As a matter of fact, one of the things that we were briefed on is there may be a new rate for the higher income Americans that I think Donald Trump is pushing. Now, we weren't told what that rate is. We weren't told where it would start, but that is one of the things that's yet to be filled in. Mm-hmm. And like I said, if you want to help the working man, you've got to have a competitive business climate compared to other countries, and that certainly is one of the goals.
Yeah. So how frustrated are you that Republicans could not repeal and replace Obamacare this last go-around?
Well, I think they should have been able to, and we're going to find out whether leadership, specifically Mitch McConnell, really wants to do that soon. You know, in order to repeal Obamacare, we have to go through a process called reconciliation, in which we vote to allow the Senate to repeal at least parts of Obamacare with 51 votes. The last time we did that, that expires at the end of the month. So obviously we're not going to do it under the last budget reconciliation instructions. The question that I don't think the national media is picking up on yet is, when we pass our new budget, which is really just a framework for the amount of money we're going to spend, we're obviously going to do instructions allowing the Senate to pass tax reform with 51 votes, but are we going to one more time give the Senate a chance to deal with health care reform with 51 votes? And if that is not done, you really wonder whether Mitch McConnell wanted it to get it done all along. That's a big question that the mainstream media, I think, hasn't picked up on, which is why you have to turn to Joy Cardine to find the facts.
Well, you just revealed that. I am kind of clipping along, as I know our time with you is limited. Do you have any problem with President Trump saying that the National Football League owners should fire players who do not stand or who are protesting during the national anthem?
Well, normally it's not something a president would get involved in. On the other hand, we do have a cultural problem here, and people have to point it out. There are people confused as to what a great country we have here, and we have some of the most highly paid individuals in our society who are in a country in which the whole rest of the world wants to get in here. A lot of times we talk about immigration. I talk to all the immigrants who come to Washington, a very diverse city. People are trying to come here from sub-Saharan Africa, Latin America, Asia, everywhere. And we have athletes who are role models for the young people, in essence saying that, oh, America is such a horrible place, I can't stand for the national anthem. And even worse than that, I don't know the degree to which Donald Trump has dealt with this, we have a bunch of billionaire owners who, I guess, to be cool, are saying, yeah, I can understand that position. Now, there's no question people have the right to say whatever they want. That goes without saying. But I think we are doing a bad job of explaining to the young people of this country what a great country we have, when people who are really, almost everybody would change position for an American athlete today. And these people, the American athletes, are in essence saying, I am so put upon, or people are so put upon in America, that I can't stand for the anthem. So I'm glad to see somebody's fighting back. It shouldn't have been left to the president. A lot of other people should be out there talking as well.
We will be talking with Democratic Congressman Mark Pocan in our next half hour. He took a knee behind his podium at the end of a floor speech denouncing Trump's attacks on athletes. Pocan said that taking a knee is a broader sign of patriotism and respect for our country. A day earlier, Democrat Sheila Jackson Lee of Texas took a knee on the House floor as well. What's your reaction to your colleagues taking part in these protests?
Well, I think it's nice if he's saying it's a sign of respect, but of course, I think when the football players took a knee, they were taking a knee because they felt there were things fundamentally wrong with America, and they couldn't stand for the national anthem as people have stood for decades. Yeah. And you look at America today compared to America in 1930, you look at America today compared to every other country around the world, you look at all the millions of people who are trying to get in here, And all of a sudden you have, sadly, Mark Pocan. I like Mark. Remember to say hi to Mark for me when you talk to him this second half of the hour. I like Mark, but you have people like Mark saying, man, you know, we have such fundamental problems in the United States that I'm going to side with people who can't stand for the national anthem. And that, I mean, what is so bad in America today? Everybody wants to get in here, Mark.
Well, what I mean, the protest started, and a protest against a country where people of color are not treated the same as whites, especially in our criminal justice system. Are you saying that, you know, that's not a problem, or that that it's not okay for someone to protest that by kneeling?
Well, it's okay to protest it. I'm not sure that that's right at all. I mean, I think, first of all, in the state of Wisconsin, I think... insofar as our black population, a lot of it is in Milwaukee. Largely the Democrat Party, you know, vets your judicial appointments. We have a very liberal district attorney in Milwaukee. The juries are largely picked from a jury pool that I think is primarily Democrat. A lot of minority on the pool. So I don't think Milwaukee is tilted against minorities. I mean, there are criminal problems with crime, which sadly exists disproportionately in areas like Milwaukee, but I don't think the answer is to say we're not going to punish criminals.
Let's go to Victor in Madison. Hi, Victor.
Hi. I just want to, Representative, it's an honor speaking with you. And Joy, thank you for the call. But no one is stating that America isn't great. What is happening is that our elected politicians are propagating a narrative that is flawed. In this case, Martin Luther King should have crossed a different bridge, or even Rosa Parks should have sat on a different bus. There are real social issues with them that are not a part of the leading class. That narrative is not being propagated to the inner cities. The inner cities is not about crime. What's causing the crime is an economic issue.
Yeah, and I'm going to jump in, Victor. So it's kind of saying, again, he was saying, I think, the question I stated, that people who are protesting are not protesting or saying that the country isn't great. They think there are some social injustice issues that need to be attended to.
Well, I tell you, the people who are protesting, Washington is a very diverse city. We have people from all around the world here. The people who are protesting who think we have fundamental problems in America ought to talk to all the people from around the world. And a lot of times this is focusing on perceived injustices to black people. They ought to talk to the immigrants from Eritrea or Ethiopia or Nigeria or Somalia that I talk to when I'm in Washington, and how grateful they are to be in America rather than other countries. And more people would come here if they could. Now, these people think America is the land of opportunity and wonderful. They hit the ground running. They come here, even though maybe in their native land they didn't even speak English. So I don't see this idea that America is a horrible place to be a person of color from, because so many people of color from all around the world are trying to get in here.
Hey, here's another one for you. Aaron Rodgers is suggesting that that Green Bay Packers fans at the game tonight at Lambeau Field, the game against the Bears, that everybody lock arms in a show of unity. Governor Walker was asked if he would lock arms, symbolically at least, and he says he's a Packers fan. He'll continue to cheer for the team, and though he was raised to stand and put his hand over his heart during the national anthem, and that is what he intends to do. Not telling other people what to do, but that's what he is going to do. What would you do, Congressman Grothman?
Oh my goodness! Well, I'm not going to be at the Packer game tonight. I'm not a season ticket holder or anything. I'm not one of the privileged few. I guess I'll do whatever I think at that time shows respect for the country. I think normally you put your hand over your heart. That's the thing you're supposed to do. But, you know, if for one day is a sign that we're not going to put up with this taking a knee anymore, I guess if I was at the game tonight, I would do whatever I felt, given the situation, show the most respect for the country.
Some critics of President Trump said he was paying too much attention to the NFL protests and not enough on Puerto Rico, which is struggling to get back on its feet after being hit really hard by Hurricane Maria. Trump says he can juggle multiple issues and that he hasn't forgotten about Puerto Rico. He noted that it's more difficult to get food, water, and other supplies there because it's an island in the middle of an ocean. He also said that Puerto Rico's governor is thankful for the great federal response. How concerned are you about where Trump's priorities are and whether the country's paying enough attention to Puerto Rico?
Well, Joy, you brought up the football before you brought up Puerto Rico. Mm-hmm. So I guess you can talk about a lot of things in a half hour. You can talk about a lot of things in a day. And I'm sure, President Trump probably spent less than 5 minutes sending out these tweets. We are working on Puerto Rico, obviously, in Congress, spending a lot more time dealing with the hurricane issue. Almost no time, except for when reporters talk to me, dealing with the football issue. Mm-hmm. So I don't have a problem with President Trump dealing with both.
And all of our callers want to talk about the football issue just about.
Your callers should realize it's desperate for people in Puerto Rico. They ought to be calling in on Puerto Rico, not the silly football. But on with the callers.
Yeah, Sarah on Facebook says, I'd like to hear how both members of Congress plan to bridge the increasingly nasty partisan divide, specifically what they and their party are willing to do, not what they think the other side should do. All right, well, there you go.
Well, first of all, I think people get along in Congress on a personal level a lot better than your caller seems to think. Given the rules of the Senate that most bills, including the big appropriation bills, pass with 60 votes, all the big bills are bipartisan. And as you know, you maybe pointed out, Joy, in the first big hurricane bill last week, or a couple weeks ago, I voted with President Trump. A lot of Republicans didn't, but I voted with President Trump to make sure we did get some disaster aid to these other parts of the country. I do think we're coming off a kind of a divisive time in our country. I think Al Sharpton, was invited to the White House repeatedly under the past president. I don't think I would have done that, but I think President Trump is doing what he can to try to be more of a healer. And like I said, I get along with the Democrats just fine. We'll be on the floor in a couple hours, and I'll be talking about legislation with them at that time.
Yeah. Last question, as we are out of time. Besides the issues we've talked about, what else are you particularly concerned with these days? What are you working on? What do you want to let our listeners, your constituents know?
Trying to hold the line on the budget because it's just been not as reported as it should be right now, but I think we're going to be spending way too much money this biennium, particularly for a Republican Congress. I am repeatedly trying to get some welfare reform through here. I think it's something Donald Trump wants to do eventually, but they're going to push it back either to next year or the year after. I wish it's something that would happen a lot quicker. We're also doing what we can to try to get some provisions in a bill dealing with the student debt crisis. So those are things that are my priorities right now. Oh, Joy, we're not done. I wish you'd come back next week and interview me again.
We are done, Congressman Grothman.
Oh!
I will be listening the next time Wisconsin Public Radio asks you to join and listen along from home. Thanks a lot for being with us.
Okay, one more time, goodbye to my wonderful erudite listeners on Wisconsin Public Radio.
I was hoping you would say that. Glenn Grothman, Republican U.S. Representative from Wisconsin's 6th Congressional District. You're listening to the Ideas Network. I'm Joy Cardine. We will welcome in just a few minutes, Democratic Congressman Mark Pocan. But first, Kate Archer Kent is here, as you might have forgotten, but we are in our fall membership drive. And we
will not let anyone forget.
We do need to hear from you. We're giving a little extra time to our Congress members to talk with you. So we're kind of shortening up these asks of your support. We are looking for 34 more pledges in the next 30 minutes or so. So won't you be one of them at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Yes, this is short and abbreviated, and thank you if you've already given, and if you haven't, help pay for the programs you enjoy by making your contribution right this very second at WPR.org or 888-202-2552. 202-2552.
When you give to Wisconsin Public Radio, and when you listen to Wisconsin Public Radio, you are making your community a better place because you are engaged and you are informed. And when you give to Wisconsin Public Radio, you are doubling the good that you do.
That's because WPR is listener supported, which means that your financial support is the foundation of our budget. Your support makes this incredible service available to you and to the entire state. So pledge now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Wisconsin Public Radio has been around for 100 years. And sure, that's a pretty long time, but you don't have to be a longtime listener to appreciate WPR. Whether you've listened all your life or tuned in for the first time only recently, you know that the programming you hear on WPR is special. You tune in for news and information with a variety of perspectives and entertainment and music that warms your heart.
You know, Wisconsin Public Radio offers something that makes your life better. In this centennial year, let's celebrate one more occasion, your first ever gift to WPR. It's an exciting time to join the community of supporters who make WPR possible. So make your gift now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
You might be wondering, how much should I give? Well, that's up to you. Your contribution of any amount will be turned into great programs, programs that will keep you informed and entertained all year long.
So make your pledge right now in the amount that's right for you at WPR.org or 888-202-2552. When you do, you play an essential part in funding the programs you count on every day.
I love this. Laurel from Rio Pledge, she says, I get a lot of windshield time going to and from work. WPR keeps my brain engaged. Windshield time. It's good. Bill from Appleton says, I began listening to NPR and WPR when I was doing a student teacher internship at Starbuck Junior High in Racine and was commuting to Madison. WPR kept me entertained and added to my education as a brand new teacher. Last year, I retired after 36 years of teaching, and I have never quit listening to our wonderful public radio. I'm finally becoming a sustainer, so I won't forget anymore. Thank you so much, Bill. I'm glad you're still listening as a new retiree.
And a sustainer.
Yeah.
Thank you.
And I plan to listen to when I am a retiree, starting on Monday, when Kate Archer-Kent takes over the reins of the morning show, and I hope you will be there too. Your pledge helps keep these morning programs going strong at WPR.org or 888-202-2552. You'd think I'd have that memorized by now.
What was that, Joy?
888-202-2552. I did not remember. Thank you, Kate. Let's welcome in our next congressman, Mark Pocan, a Democratic U.S. representative from Wisconsin's 2nd Congressional District, which includes Madison, Beloit, and Dodgeville. Good morning.
Good morning, Joy.
Thanks a lot for being with us. So I wanted to ask you first about Vice President Mike Pence is going to be visiting Wisconsin today, talking about, among other things, tax reform. What do you think of the new GOP effort, the Trump administration plan for tax reform?
Well, you know, I guess, Joy, I'm glad it's more than 140 characters, but there's not a whole lot more detail there. You know, the Trump administration put out some pretty good details on tax cuts for the wealthiest in this country and for corporations, but then he left all the real information about how it's going to affect the middle class to be decided by Congress. And Joy, I know you watch all this very close. I don't know if I would trust Congress to, you know, take care of it all. It just his even rough outline from what we're seeing could actually cost people more who are in the middle class, and then the only breaks will really be there for the wealthiest. So we're real concerned. You know, they've had absolutely no luck in dealing with health care this year. I think tax reform could be, you know, more difficult if you're going to do it right. And I have yet to see the details. They haven't really shown what they're going to do for the middle class and those aspiring to me in the middle class, and that's what worries me the most.
Yeah. Congressman Grothman, who says hello, by the way, was frustrated with the failure to get health care taken care of, the repeal and replace of the Affordable Care Act. But he says it's not over till it's over. It's it's still going to happen. What's next for health care?
Well, look, what institution, after 7 years of complaining about something, finally has the ability with the House and the Senate and the President to do that, and then they still can't, here we are almost 10 months into the year, get it done? And maybe, this is the time we realize we need to pivot and to stabilize the current existing law. There are things that need to be fixed to make sure that actuarially it'll continue to work. But let's face it, 20 million people now have access to health insurance in this country. If you have a pre-existing condition, you now can get health insurance. You don't have a lifetime cap if you've had something serious happen in your life. Women are paying the same as men for care, which didn't happen pre-ACA. There's a lot of things that came out of this that are really strong and we want to keep. Let's stabilize what we have, and if they can aspirationally figure something out that they haven't figured out in 7 years and 10 months, let's see what it is. But in the meantime, don't destroy the system that we have that's working for tens of millions of people who didn't have health insurance just a few years ago.
Yeah. I am going to talk to you about the news you made earlier this week when you took a knee on the House floor. But first, I got scolded by Congressman Grothman for talking about this football flap when there are so many other important issues out there. One of them being is that President Trump is being scolded for taking the NFL players to task when Puerto Rico is in such a state of catastrophe. Do you think that, how do you rate the Trump administration's response to Puerto Rico?
Yeah, well, I mean, it's been somewhere between non-existent and barely recognizing that you have 3.5 people who are American citizens who need help desperately. And let me add to that list, Joy, the Virgin Islands, U.S. Virgin Islands, because they also are at terrible risk right now because of the first hurricane that came through. So we've got people who desperately need assistance. And while we took care of some of the help that's needed in Texas and in Florida, I know we're in the process of dealing with, but we've got to remember we have two areas that are completely devastated in Puerto Rico with 3.5 million people. That we've got to do more. And the president was busy all weekend tweeting about the NFL. I think there were 15 tweets about the NFL and one where he was basically blaming Puerto Rico for bankruptcy issues rather than addressing the problem that they have because of a hurricane. So, while I think we're still waiting for a much, much more serious response that's needed because they need help right now before more people die, it also, the reason some of the conversation happens is because the president sets the tone with that phone as he's sending out his tweets, and unfortunately that often is where the media all goes.
Our guest is Mark Pocan, a Democratic U.S. representative from Wisconsin's 2nd Congressional District. If you have a question for him, we have an open line for you at 1-800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to ideas@wpr.org. Now, you can talk about the NFL President Trump feud if you want to, but you can also talk about health care or taxes or other issues before Congress that matter to you. Let us talk about your taking a knee on the floor of the House earlier this week. What statement were you trying to make with that, Congressman Pocan?
Well, I have to admit I reached my kind of breaking point, I think, with this administration over Charlottesville. When there's maybe many of disagreements I've had with President Trump in the last several months, but when I saw what happened there, when I saw his response that there are very fine people in the Klan who are white supremacists, who are neo-Nazis, it's just been this culmination of things that have really allowed people to express their hate in a country that I think, we are trying to move past all of that. I mean, we want this country to truly offer its promise, which is an incredible promise, to every single person. And right now, not every person really is fully recognized, especially if you're a person of color. And under this president, with his actions over and over and over again, he's made it more and more difficult for people. So when he did that this weekend, I just my response was, you know, this country is so much more than that. He always puts it at the feet of veterans. You know, veterans died for this country, for the ideals of this country. We want to make sure those ideals are offered to everyone, and that's what that is. It's a nonviolent protest. The president can't more critically go after a black man for nonviolence than white supremacists for violence. And unfortunately, that's what he's done. And, you know, I just thought I had to make a statement because I really find the direction that he's taking the country to be very counter to where the people of this country are.
Yeah, so when President Trump says that players who kneel or sit or don't stand during the national anthem should be fired or suspended, what do you say to that?
Well, I'm saying that, you know, this is, again, someone's First Amendment rights. And, again, there's really valid reasons when you look at why they're doing that. Let's have the debate about what it means to be living in the United States, and because of the color of your skin, you in some areas, you may be pulled over. And I've had so many stories. I've had stories from Wisconsin sitting state legislators when I served in the legislature who've told me their life experiences multiple times from multiple members. This is very real, and America is so much better than that. So, again, for him to be dragging us back to a period where now people don't feel like they need to wear hoods when they show their racism, that they can go on the street and do what they're doing, this is just such a terrible sign to young people, to the international community. And I just think more of us need to stand up to when he does this. And I think the best way to stand up to it was to take a knee.
Yeah. I want to also ask you about Packers quarterback Aaron Rodgers is asking fans to at Lambeau Field tonight at the Bears-Packers game to lock arms in unity instead of necessarily kneeling or sitting during the national anthem, to lock arms. What do you think of that as a gesture, a compromise, a something?
It's a great suggestion, because what he's doing is saying, let's take this conversation, elevate it to help elevate just what I talked about, what really this country is about, making sure the access is available for everyone. So anytime we collectively do this and we stand up to any one person with a Twitter account for what's right, I think that's the right statement. And I commend him for putting that idea out there, and I hope that that goes over well at the game tonight.
Governor Walker was asked about that and said that, "I personally believe, and my family believes, that when the national anthem is played for all those men and women who fought like the people, when I was in Korea a few weeks ago, I laid a wreath at the memorial for the Korean War, and I thought about my uncle who was in the Korean War. For all those veterans and for all those men and women fighting today, I just think it's critically important to show respect and put my hand over my heart. In terms of what others do, I will leave it to them to explain what they do or don't do." Do you have a reaction to that?
Yeah, my reaction, I think, is if you really love this country, and I think many people do from both political parties, from all political spectrums, you should be able to live by the ideals of this country. And free speech is one of those ideals. And the ideals that everyone be treated equally is another one, unfortunately, that doesn't work for everyone. So I think what you've seen with the players, they're people who are still the ones who are often being pulled over simply for the color of their skin. This is something where maybe we can use as a great educational moment. And again, talk about how amazingly great this country is and what our ideals really are about. And hopefully that positive comes out of it. I'm just tired of, you know, Charlottesville was, for me, the rock bottom. There are not very fine people who are in the Klan, who are white supremacists or neo-Nazis. And when you have a president who says that, that's the exact wrong tone for the country. That means we need a national dialogue and debate about what we really are, because I know the vast majority of people, regardless of political persuasion, are good people. And we need to make sure that we recognize everyone with the great fortunes of this country.
Barry in Rice Lake is with us. Hi, Barry.
Hi. The reason I decided to call in this morning was, as a congressman, when you just said that it's a First Amendment issue with the NFL, that's the problem with the conversation. It is not a First Amendment issue with a player deciding to take a knee as an employee in uniform. It needs to be about what it is, not saying if you're against the First Amendment, if you're against them taking a knee. The NFL, as an employer, has all of the right in the world to say you must stand.
And the NFL owners, all right, that's fine. But the NFL owners are not forcing the issue, are they, Congressman Polkane?
No, in fact, that's exactly what I was going to say. The only person forcing this is the tweeter-in-chief right now who's made this an issue. And, in fact, in many cases, the owners are standing in solidarity or kneeling in solidarity or locking arms in solidarity with the players because they know how their players have been affected. So, I understand that whenever you talk about the flag or the anthem, it can bring out really strong emotions and reactions in people. I have those same strong emotions and reactions. I love this country and all of its ideals. I just want it to be available to every single person who lives here, and right now we don't fully have that, which is why the whole movement started. And I actually think it's even taking, more of a broader meaning right now as we do this, as it's kind of a stand for, again, what this country really aspires to be.
Let me ask a question that I asked Congressman Grothman as Lindsay posed it for both of you. Lindsay on Facebook says, it seems like the Dems had a hard time that's not the one. It was one asking, what are you going to do to foster an environment of bipartisanship? Do you have an answer to that?
Yeah, I mean, I'll tell you, I think the one thing that, as you know, Joy, not always everything that happens in Madison or Washington gets reported, is there's only so much time you have to do all that. I'll give you a great example. Right now, on September 30th, Perkins student loans expire. So I reached out to a Republican, Representative Stefanik from New York, and we have currently 220 plus bipartisan sponsors to make sure that program gets reauthorized. We can't get it on the floor yet. We're trying to figure out how to do that. It's an important program for people like myself who grew up in a lower middle class family that you need availability to loans if you want to get a higher education, and just because you can't afford it shouldn't stop someone from being able to do that. And we are, on many issues, we work very bipartisanly. I just think that sometimes what gets reported, it's not sexy to report, two people working together across the party lines to get something done. It is interesting sometimes to put the conflict that happens in Washington or Madison on the news, and that's what people see more of. So, I do think rank-and-file members, people like Glenn Grothman and myself can work together on something, but that rarely gets reported. It's usually what happens with, 20 people in Congress. You would think there are 20 people who serve in Congress if you watch the nightly news as your only source of news. And I think, we've got to just realize a lot more does happen.
Yeah. Lindsay on Facebook, her question was, it seems like Democrats have a hard time translating their message to general voters in 2018, even though that their policies are more geared to the working and middle classes. What does Representative Polkane think is the answer? Is it a policy issue, a marketing issue, or both?
I think Lindsay's exactly right. And I think, in 2016, there's a reason why we had 200,000 fewer Democratic voters in Wisconsin than 4 years earlier. And I would argue what we always should be talking about, which is economics, what people talk about at their kitchen table, whether or not they can afford their rent or mortgage, if they have health insurance for their family, can they send their kid to college if they want to go, and can they take a family vacation? Honestly, that's what most people talk about. They're not thinking about all the other policy perspectives or how the tax cut policy might affect them. They care about the core economic issues, and we have to get back to talking about those issues as the primary issues. And everything else we can then have conversations about once we've started to engage voters. But I don't think we did a good job at all in 2016 on that. And I think we've got to do a much better job going into 2018 to saying, yes, we actually do have your backs. We don't have a tax plan that's just cutting taxes for the wealthiest, and everyone else is going to get maybe some change or pay even a little more to do that. We need to really express where those economic core values are. And I think Lindsay points that out very well.
I wonder if you have a reaction to a new study from UW-Madison that shows that Wisconsin's voter ID law discouraged up to, I'm trying to remember now, it was in the tens of thousands of voters.
Yeah, I saw that. That's something, I used to serve on the Campaigns and Elections Committee in the state legislature, and I remember when we had hearings about voter fraud and we never found any because it's one of, again, those manufactured issues. I got PolitiFacted, and usually people don't tout when they get PolitiFacted, but I got PolitiFacted on. I said it was more likely to get struck by lightning than to commit in-person voter fraud, and I got a true, and they don't give trues out that often, as you know, because it's the stats are there. People don't commit voter fraud in the numbers that it all it gets portrayed. So when you do things like photo ID or ending early voting or making it difficult for people to vote, you're really affecting our democracy. And I think anything that puts us in that direction is bad, regardless of what political party you may come from. And I think, you know, some of the provisions we've had in Wisconsin, now we can see from a study like this in a more empirical way, have had a negative effect on people being able to participate in our democracy. And I think we need to change that.
The U.S. Supreme Court's going to be hearing oral arguments in the Wisconsin redistricting case. So what are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, that's October 3rd, next week. I am very anxious to see how that gets discussed and how they analyze it. I mean, you know, I am someone, Joy, who is a strong supporter of a system that they have in Iowa and California and a few other places where it's a citizen panel that draws the lines. It's hard to ask politicians to draw lines because if often they're thinking about their own futures as they do that. So you don't want politicians picking their voters as opposed to voters picking their elected officials. And in Iowa, I would argue if you look at the four congressional districts, for example, three of them are competitive almost every session, as opposed to Wisconsin, where, you know, I think you could argue the first congressional district is probably the tightest of the districts, and then from there it gets a little wider. You really need to have people having a reason to talk to everyone in their district, and when you have really red districts or really blue districts, you don't have that. So I think I'm hoping that the court case will look at how there was gerrymandering clearly in Wisconsin. And just on the congressional races, Joy, 100,000 more people voted for Democrats for Congress in 2016 than Republicans, but Republicans have 5 of the 8 seats. It just defies logic.
We're going to wrap this up as we have our pledge drive to get back to Congressman Pocan. I just wanted to note that every single caller wants to talk about freedom of speech and respect and patriotism and the football, the NFL, protests, and it's just nobody wants to talk about tax code or health care or any of the other issues we've talked about today. What do you make of that? Do you think has President Trump ignited a culture war of sorts with this?
Well, yeah, absolutely. I mean, I really look at it as I feel like, you know, we're a giant reality show right now as a country. And, you know, he does things to improve ratings. And it's not like we're doing things for the common good for the country. Instead, we're operating as if he's running a reality show. And it's very disheartening because, as you know, Joy, and I just want to say thank you for your many, many years at Wisconsin Public Radio. I've enjoyed being the time I was on the legislature for those 14 years and now. And, you know, thank you for what you've done there. But, you know, these are real conversations we've had over this 20-some years about a lot of issues, and I've never seen us drop to this level of discourse. And it's very disheartening. Very disheartening as someone who believes that, you know, we can make our country even greater by working together. And instead, I see this division and divide. And I see a lot of good people leaving public service, both Democrats and Republicans. I miss my friend Reed Ribble from Wisconsin, who was a very reasonable Republican who wanted to get things done. And we need to get more people like Reed Ribble back in office.
Thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you, Joy.
Mark Pocan, Democratic U.S. Representative from Wisconsin's 2nd Congressional District. I'm Joy Cardine, along with Kate Archer-Kent, and we are in our Wisconsin Public Radio Fall Membership Drive, and just a couple of minutes left in this hour to encourage you to help support this kind of programming. WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Yes, Joy, help pay for the programs you depend on, we all depend on. We are looking for a couple dozen more pledges in the next few minutes. We can get there. I am sure we can with your help. Make your donation right now. Support the programs, the conversations like we just heard this hour, conversations that inform you, engage you at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Maybe you donated a few years ago and you feel like you've done your part. If you enjoy listening to WPR year after year, your continued support is what keeps us going.
And if it's been a while since you donated, this is a perfect time to renew at WPR.org or 888-202-2552, and we'll be glad to have you back.
You love Wisconsin Public Radio because it's your source for intelligent radio. There are costs associated with high-quality radio, and that's where you come in. Your support is so important.
So make that pledge right now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552. And why don't you ask for that WPR beanie with your gift of $10 a month? It's cooling off now today, and that beanie would have been good early this morning when Joy and I were walking into the studio. Yeah, pledge now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Yeah, you get to decide how much to pledge. If you want the beanie or the winter knit cap, as I've been calling it, you can ask for that with your gift of $10 a month. We have Wendy from Delafield who says, I'm donating $100 for Wisconsin Public Radio's 100-year anniversary.
It.
Oh, this is very sweet. I just saw this. And an additional $31 for the number of years Joy Cardine
Aww.
Has been at Wisconsin Public Radio. That's
Wendy.
That's very
that's
sweet,
cool.
Wendy.
Yeah.
I hope that you, too, will pledge to support listener-supported Wisconsin Public Radio with your pledge at WPR.org or 888-202-2552. I'm Joy Cardine with Kate Archer-Kent. This is the Ideas Network.